welcome to the Harvard Heights Neighborhood Show. I'm your host, David Nico. Today we have a very special guest. Kim Calvert has agreed to join me after weeks of negotiating via Nextdoor.com. She's finally agreed to join me on the podcast. Welcome, Kim. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for getting me here.
Anytime. Kim is a newbie, as it were, to Harvard Heights. I'm a newbie as well. I've been here, 5 years. Came here in 2008. Kim has just arrived this past fall. So welcome to the neighborhood, Kim.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me here again.
I'm thrilled to be here in Harvard Heights. It's an honor to be part of the club, as I've heard it referred to on your podcast.
Well, yeah, it certainly feels like a club, and the primary goal of this show is to expand that club, because a lot of times we get together, we have our parties and things, and you see the same people over and over again, which is great. We love all those people that come to those parties, but the goal of this show is to kind of expand that reach a little bit so we have even bigger and better parties maybe in the future, or at least just get to know each other even better. But so you just moved here, and you were telling me a little bit about how when you moved in you had to do a lot of very quick renovations so you were comfortable moving in. You had to blow out your attic of old asbestos, or not asbestos, but just insulation and other things.
Icky stuff, like when you poked your head up into the attic, you said, mostly like it was, there was rat poop.
Right.
Bird poop. Just icky stuff that needed to go.
Yeah. We just dealt with rodents in our attic as well. We finally sealed up everything and got rid of them. It's amazing how prevalent they are and how you truly never see them. I mean, I never did. We got a few in the traps and we're glad to get rid of them. But I mean, as far as the exterminator told me, he's like, these they don't make their homes in the houses per se. Well, or maybe they just come to sleep at night there, but they don't come to the house looking for food, is what he said. Mm. They have plenty to eat out in the open with palm nuts and other natural fruits and whatever. They go through trees, they scavenge out in the world. And I see squirrels all the time. I never see rats just running around the streets or up in the wires or whatever. But apparently they're there, and there's lots of them. So we got our house sealed from it as well, and we took care of it just this past summer. I'm sure it's a thing that needs to be dealt with in many homes. But we took care of ours, and I'm glad that you took care of yours.
Well, I've heard cats are a good remedy as well.
I should probably look into that as well.
Someone told me that although I did have the major rodent exclusion procedure done, someone said, we should just get a couple of cats, because the rats, if they smell the cats, they won't come to your house. So
I have enough cats in my yard alone that I would think they would not get near it, but apparently they go across the power lines and in through the roof somewhere. But it's been kind of fun on Nextdoor.com. I've seen a lot of your posts since you moved to the neighborhood. You found a woodworker to rework some finish on a built-in.
Yes, and thanks to my parrot.
Oh, your parrot. Your parrot tore it up?
You've heard of wood-destroying pests.
Yes.
Normally those are known as termites, but there's another species. It's called a Moluccan cockatoo.
Moluccan cockatoo, okay. But you posted the results before and after, and whoever you found did a great job. Yeah. I mean, so it's nice to see you come into the neighborhood and then immediately get to work on making your house better. You also did some foundation work?
Right. I mean, in that whole escrow, this was the first time that I had ever bought a house.
So, right.
And I was like probably one of those people that drove the real estate agents crazy, because when it said in the contract, you should be aware and do everything you need to do and get all the inspections you need to get. I took that literally.
Yeah, and you should.
And so I had the foundation inspected, the chimney inspected, this, that, everything inspected. And I pretty much knew, I wanted to know what I was going to be dealing with, and so I could make a good decision as far as if this is a house I really wanted to purchase or not. If we would have spoken to my dad about it, who's like grew up in Iowa during the Depression era, and like no nonsense, hey dad, I'm buying this house and it needs a new foundation and the chimney's about ready to fall down,
right?
And he'd think, I'd raise a fool.
What are you crazy?
Exactly.
That's not practical.
You know, but other people tell me, oh, everybody's chimney's falling down.
Right.
It's normal.
It's completely, it's California. Chimneys fall down out here. That's, you know, what are you going to do?
But, you know, I mean, the foundation was important because a lot of these houses in the neighborhood, they have these brick and mortar foundations.
Yep.
And they don't go very deep, and the mortar disintegrates over time. And, you know, I just really, that was something I wanted to get done. So we did that right away and, you know, protected the floors and cleaned out the attic and just this flurry of activity for about 30 days before moving in.
Perfect.
Not to say that it's done because, you know, as you know, it's an ongoing project forever, but that's part of the fun.
When you rang my doorbell, I was doing plumbing in my upstairs bathroom and it's, you know, it's nonstop. Uh-huh. And sometimes you feel like, oh, is this ever going to stop? And it's never going to stop, but you still do kind of love doing it. I mean, even when it gets dirty or gross or just annoying, I still love doing it. I sometimes think I should have been a contractor or builder or something because I'll go past something being renovated and I'll think, oh, that looks good. I should.
Right.
Maybe I should do that to my garage.
Exactly.
You know, and it's like, I don't have the money for that.
Yeah, I know. It's like my favorite TV shows are like The Rehab Addict. I don't know if you've seen that one. And all these ones, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's a great idea. Oh, that's good. I'm not going to like binge watch on Rehab Addict episodes.
I love YouTube. Do-it-yourself video clips, like how to, you know, because both of my faucet fixtures in my upstairs bathroom are leaking. Every time you turn it on, it just spew water out the top of them, and I was like, this is great. But go to YouTube, oh, compression valve, oh, I can do that, no problem. Go to the, you know, and that's what I was doing, so. So, having just bought a house and moved to Harvard Heights, where did you live previous to Harvard Heights?
Well, I've been in Los Angeles since the 80s. I'm originally from Denver.
Gotcha.
Spent quite a bit of time in Nashville and back to Denver and then to LA in the 80s. But always pretty much lived on the west side. That's where, when I first arrived from Denver, I drove the 10 all the way to the beach and kind of just ended up staying on that side of town.
Right.
You know, because being from Denver, the idea of being close to an ocean was like a great novelty, you know, like
about as foreign as you can
get. I'm like living next to the ocean. Wow. And so I just, and then you get familiar with, you know, the area and it's comfortable there, you know, what stores you like, you join the gym there, blah, blah.
Right.
So I kind of stuck there, you know, for a while. And I would go through periods of time every once in a while where I'd get the crazy idea and that I didn't want to rent anymore. I wanted to buy a house.
Right.
And then I'd do, you know, spend about like a weekend going to open houses and thinking, this is insane, I can't afford this. And and this last time, like I guess about a year ago actually, I got that house buying bug again, and you know, now it's like so great with the internet, you know.
Yeah.
You can just say, I want this zip code, this price range, and which sent me out to like Granada Hills is like where
right
it's, which oh, boy. I looked out there first. I got a real estate agent out there and I just did not feel comfortable out there. It just wasn't not going to be a place where I could live. I would have felt like I was living in
the Deep Valley
or Kansas or something.
Right.
It wasn't LA anymore. So
Deep
then
Valley.
I kind of switched to, then I thought, well, then I started looking at, and I've always loved old houses, always, always. And so looking around somewhere, I saw these great prices for these older what appeared to be renovated houses. But we're talking like South Central LA,
right,
like down there below, I don't know, below Exposition by
sure
quite a ways. And then I just learned all about the whole thing of flippers.
Right.
And what they do to houses. And like, they look really great on the photos, but when you get in, you see like, oh my God,
the detail work.
They did this as quickly and cheaply as possible, and it's all like nasty. So slowly but surely, kind of like gravitated up towards like the West Adams Historic District in this whole area.
Right.
Went to an open house one day, and David Raposa, who a lot of people know in the area, was showing the house. It wasn't one of his listings, but as a favor, he was showing the house, and Laura Myers was there too, and started, they had the West Adams newspaper.
You've been West Adams baptized with David and Laura. They are the pinnacle to welcome you into this neighborhood.
Well, Laura started saying, you know, recommending, well, you know, David is someone who really knows the area. You should consider talking to him. She gave me the little Waha newsletter, and I went home and read it, and faithfully, like, oh, this is exciting, this is exciting. So I basically stalked David Raposa from that point forward, and like insisted that he be my real estate agent, because the other guy that was doing the Valley was always sending me to these, well, this is, isn't this what you want? You know, these old houses that were flipped.
Right.
But David understood what I wanted and needed in a house. And
yeah,
it was great, too, because he knew all the houses. I mean, even if I would find them on, like, Redfin, I could, David, what about this one?
Right.
He goes, and then he said, well, this house is in a good neighborhood, but it has this problem, and it has this problem, and that.
Right.
Oh, okay. And he knows it all.
The great thing I love about realtors like David and people like Laura is they truly feel, and this is my assertion. I don't know that they truly feel like this, but in talking with them, it feels as though they feel that they own all the houses, and they are bequeathing them to the right people.
Maybe that is correct.
And it's like, oh yes, you may live here for as long as you'd like, but when you're ready to go, I will find some other valued person to live in this place. Which is kind of fun. It's like not a landlord, but like a parent overseeing he's not going to tear out the windows, is he? No, okay, then go. You may buy that house. So it's,
plus they
it's
were
kind
great
of fun.
Great for just information, because really, although I've always like loved old houses, as far as like really understanding them, it was a vertical learning curve for me, you know, to really understand.
It's almost a whole new language of terms you have to learn and figure out.
And what is kosher and what isn't, you know.
Right.
You know, exactly like what kind of finish you would put on your floors. You know, that you're not going to do high gloss. Okay,
right.
Got it. Okay.
We had a neighbor, I won't disclose who was talking, but we had a neighbor buy a house in the neighborhood. And they didn't like the paint colors on the inside, because they were very traditional but dark color paint on the interior of the house. Uh-huh. And they went really light with the colors. And one of Mr. Raposa's realtors was walking through there and said, yeah, they went a little light with the paint, but, you know, that's changeable. You can change that back. Like, he was already thinking about the next person that was going to buy it and how they would change that back to how it should be. And I thought, that is hilarious. But they do have a love for the houses. And like you're saying, the learning curve is not a curve. It's vertical.
Right.
It's like, I know nothing, and oh boy, I've got a lot to learn. So
right. I mean, I understand you could even get like a master's degree in old house preservation.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, that sounds like fun. Maybe I should do that for my next career.
Well, I've definitely thought about like getting, you know, maybe another home in the area and then renting it to architectural students at USC or something, so that they would, you know, have a neat place to live, but also, you know, take care of the place and give me good ideas and things like that. But we'll see about that in the future. But the realtors that work this area really know what they're talking about as far as preservation and renovation and all of that sort of stuff. So it's fun dealing with them and talking with them about that sort of thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, so when I found this particular house, I mean, as you had mentioned in a previous interview with Blake, or maybe he said this, that the house finds you. And and in a sense, when I walked into this house, it was the first open house. And I was just like, oh, I sat down on the couch because it was staged for the showing. And I was like, this, oh my God, this is my house. this is it.
It feels like that,
really.
Yeah.
And I just was... You know, I kept trying to be smart now, be smart. Don't be crazy. Don't let your emotions rule you. Don't do anything dumb. But like I said, I bought a house that needed a new foundation and the chimney's falling over. But,
right.
But, you know, it's still standing.
It needed you to come in and fix those things.
And I adore it. You know, I just, last Friday night, we had this little pop-up dinner for the neighborhood.
Which, yes. I'm sorry I could not make that. We had other folks over at our house for dinner that evening. So
it was so fun. I mean, just sitting in, took all the furniture out of the living room and set up these big tables with white tablecloths. It was not every party has to be elegant, idea. But it was very elegant. Yeah. And I was just sitting there, and I'm like looking up and looking at these happy, smiling, cool people that are my neighbors and thinking, I just felt like so incredibly blessed.
Right.
You know, really just, it was just one of those feelings of just like, I'm just where I need to be and this is bliss,
right.
You know, for me.
That's great. You were mentioning a little off the air that coming from Colorado, you were surrounded by old homes in Denver,
mm-hmm.
that there was a developer there that, you know, was in the midst of potentially having a lot of old homes knocked down to make shopping, you know, areas and whatever. Mm-hmm. And she convinced people to not do that, but renovate what was there and make it beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
What was that?
Her name was Dana Crawford.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was, I grew up there, and when I was probably like in like sixth grade or so, I remember
right.
going with my parents to the grand opening of what was called Larimer Square.
Oh.
And anybody that has been to Denver probably always wants to include Larimer Square in their visit because it's in downtown LA. It was built in the, like the 1880s.
Wow.
Because so, you know, Denver was a big gold rush town.
Sure.
And before Dana Crawford convinced people that this could be renovated rather than torn down, it was considered the worst part of Denver. It was like Skid Row.
Wow.
And somehow she got the financing. She enrolled people in the concept, and they changed this two-block strip of these old red brick buildings into what is now and still, what, 50, 60 years later, some of the highest valued real estate, commercial and residential, in all of Denver.
Wow.
And then that kind of spilled out from Larimer Square towards the old Union train station to even into the stockyards now, what was a traditional stockyard area, which is like, these are the pits of
right,
Denver. And
right.
now it's like the highest, everybody wants to live there. It's like lofts, it's shopping, it's these beautiful renovated buildings. The Union Station has been renovated into the Crawford Hotel, named in her honor.
Oh, terrific.
I mean, it is like absolutely stunning. And there's a river that runs through Denver called the Platte River.
Mm-hmm.
When I grew up, it was like if you put a match to it, it would catch on fire.
Yeah.
Now that it's a beautiful bike path, people do whitewater rafting on it.
Wow.
It's, Denver
has
like really
place
like,
out.
I mean, it's almost like an Amsterdam in the sense of like it's gone from like a cow town to this very forward-thinking city, which is really treasuring their historical assets.
That's great.
So when I see that happening here, I mean, I consider L.A., downtown L.A. is like probably lagging 50 years behind Denver in that
yeah.
respect. But you see the changes happening.
And it is happening, slowly but surely. I mean, there are
right.
lots of great lofts going up and lots of cool places happening downtown LA. I grew up in Detroit,
mm-hmm.
and I'm very used to, I didn't know about old houses because most of the old houses in Detroit, they would set on fire for whatever reason. It started in the 60s. They had a riot in the 60s and they burned a lot of properties down. And then for some reason, every year after that, on Devil's Night, you know, they would set a number of buildings on fire, and it was like, what are you doing? And just recently, with all of the recent press that Detroit has been getting on how run down it is and how it's like a third world country, and they're comparing it to bombed out places in Iraq, it's like you do see these gems, these beautiful buildings that have survived all of the neglect and turmoil. And they're in horrible condition. I mean, they really need to be rebuilt, but you look at them and you think that building is easily 115, 20 years old, and it's gorgeous. And
mm-hmm.
and there are now people coming in and rehabbing these buildings, even in Detroit, which I'm so happy about. I've been telling my family for the last 10 years,
mm-hmm.
buy something in Detroit because it's dirt cheap. You know,
right.
back in 2002, 2003, you could get property for free almost. You could get buildings for nothing. And my family would look at me like, are you crazy? That place is a dump. And it's like, yes, it's a dump, but it can't get any worse. You know, the worst it can be is become a grass field. So you might as well get it now. And when it becomes better, you can be a part of that. Nothing doing on their part. They just stayed to where they were and let everything build up around them, which is fine too, but it's like, oh, it's such an opportunity to be a part of it and just not having it.
I think some people, maybe it's like people who are into old cars, you know what I mean? Either you get it or you don't get it.
That's true.
I mean, some people would say, like, why would you buy, like, you know, a 55 Thunderbird?
Right.
And, like, and spend all of your weekends restoring it and hunting down the real parts rather than, why would you do that? Well, you know, I mean, same with the old houses. Why would you want to, you know, spend all of your money and your time renovating that old house?
It's true. It takes a particular kind of person, which is also nice about this neighborhood, is it attracts like-minded people that like these old houses and like to work on them and get them back into shape, which is terrific.
They're so fabulous. When they are done, they are so amazing.
Yeah. And they're welcoming and they're homey. Mm-hmm. And frankly, that's why every commercial or TV show you've ever seen that has a family situation, they're shot in one of these houses. Mm-hmm. You know, they build their sets to replicate these houses because it has that kind of welcoming, oh, I'm home here type of feel to it.
And I've also been told, you know, as far as like just actual the structure of the homes, that they just don't build them like this anymore, and they couldn't if they wanted to because of the timber that was used back in the day. You
the
know,
old it, redwood mm-hmm. timber, which was amazing, and it's heavy, and it. You know, that we've gone through the process in the last 15, 20 years of bolting all the houses to the ground because of earthquakes. They'll literally hop off their foundation. These houses are so big and heavy, and they've survived so many earthquakes. Mm. I think we've got our house bolted just to be up to code, but the structures are so big and so heavy with the old timber, it's very unlikely. It would have to be a wildly massive earthquake to have that happen. But all the building inspectors always, when they come around these properties, they're like, oh, that's not to code. That's, you know, it's earthquake country out here. You've got to do this and that to secure it from earthquake. It's like, stop. Let me stop you right there. This house is 110 years old.
Right.
In earthquake country. Mm-hmm. It's been doing fine. I doubt in the next 10 years, my neglecting to do some of your code updates are going to have that be the house's demise. But we'll do what we can for safety's sake. But.
Right. Yeah, I had a girlfriend who had said, like, oh, but those houses, like, aren't they a fire hazard? Again, the same thing. Yeah. This house has stood for 110 years or more and hasn't burned down yet.
Right. You know? It precisely.
Even though it's had fireplaces in multiple rooms, you know what I
mean? Yeah, that's the other thing. Is these houses have chimneys all over and they would have wood-burning potbelly stoves out, and that would go out the upstairs, and that's how the houses got heated. And frankly, the houses that were fire hazards burned down. Mm-hmm. Everything that's left is kind of safe. Right. I mean, there's things that you can do to modernize your electricity and things like that, and you probably should if you can or whatnot. Mm-hmm. But if it's lasted this long, it's there's nothing dramatic that's going to make it unsafe. So it's
knock on wood.
Knock on wood.
Knock on hard redwood.
That's right. So when you bought your house, did you have to strip a lot of paint or do anything? Was the house painted over, or was the woodwork pretty much intact?
No, it was like, from what I understand, you know, it's interesting because I'm always trying to glean information about the history of the house.
Yeah.
You know, I ask my neighbors, what do you know? And I ran into someone on the holiday stroll who lives in the neighborhood. His name is Danny Miller, and he looked up some information for me about my house, you know, and basically it's when I forgot the question.
Oh, just if you had to strip any paint.
Oh, strip anything. I heard that one of the stories that I heard from my next door neighbor was that at one point it was a woman school teacher owned it, and she had boarders, and a couple of them were painters, and they painted all day, and they came home at night and stripped paint off the wood.
Oh, terrific.
Because it looks like now there's only two bedrooms that have the woodwork painted over. And to me, it's fine. It looks fine up there.
Yeah.
Because you can do, like, colors on the walls and have the white trim pop.
Right.
It looks good. But it was interesting because when I did have the walls painted by these Scottish painters who were like totally meticulous.
Yeah.
They thought it had the woodwork had never been painted over.
Wow.
And I thought that too until I was told by my neighbor that yes, it had been.
Yeah.
It had been stripped because they did a really nice job of taking it off.
They must have been as meticulous as your Scots.
And it's a lot of woodwork too. I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
How did they?
Our house was completely painted over in the 70s or 80s or something like mm-hmm. that, and the two owners ago had everything stripped, and it looks nice, it's beautiful, but you can definitely tell that it had been painted over originally, or not originally, at some point. So mm-hmm. It's nice when you find those craftsmen that really take their time and do everything well. So it's, you know, like your Scottish painter said, I can't even tell that it was ever painted.
Well, maybe those guys were working off their rent by stripping and just wanted to make it last a long
yes,
time.
That could be. But, yeah, you always pay the people by the hour, not by the job. That's the most important thing. By the job, they get out of there quick.
Yeah, so. No, there are a lot of things. I mean, on the surface, everything looks really nice, but there's, you know, a lot of work. It still has basically all the, like, the knob and tube electrical.
Right.
And, like I said, the chimney needs work, and it needs to be, that whole outside, the part, oh my God. There's one dormer, the shingles are falling off, it's covered up with a tarp.
Right.
And the wood siding is kind of warped and has holes in it, and I'm thinking, is this all going to have to be, like, stripped and repainted and patched and repaired and...
Over time.
A little bit at a time.
A little bit at a time. That's my father-in-law's favorite thing to say, is we don't have to do this all at once. A little bit at a time.
It also is missing its porch.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Apparently, which I've also heard through the neighborhood lore since I've been here, the porch burnt down.
Oh.
So now there's this, like, big, like, cement block there.
Pad, yeah.
In front, and but no porch. So at some point I'd like to get the services of a historical architect and try to
figure out
the porch back on, because yeah. I mean, these houses, they need their porches.
Porches are great. One of my favorite places in my house is my porch.
Oh yeah.
When we bought this house, we bought it in 2008, and we spent a lot of time updating systems and plumbing and electric and all that sort of stuff. So the house wasn't livable for a good year while we were doing that work. And I was doing a lot of the prepping and demo and kind of ins and outs that needed to happen before the actual skilled laborers would come in and do the work. Mm-hmm. But during the days when I would be there, I would work for 4 or 5 hours, and then I would take a nap on the porch on my swing. And it was glorious. I just loved being out there swinging and napping, and so I highly recommend restoring your porch, because they're terrific.
The list.
That's good.
The major list. Yeah, definitely.
Excellent.
But I mean, it's really been, it's not only the houses that I've loved. I've really come to really love the neighborhood, the people. You know, at first the first time I came here for that first open house, I was thinking, ooh, this looks like a scary neighborhood. You know, I don't know if this is safe.
Right.
And you drive around the blocks and you look and, I don't know. And so I came back at night with my chihuahua.
Right.
and you know, it was just, I didn't have any sense that it was, like, dangerous.
Right.
Moms are out strolling their babies down the block.
People
are walking their dogs. People say hello when you pass on the porch, you know. I just don't get any kind of sense of being threatened or dangerous here at all.
I've never felt unsafe in this neighborhood, ever. It's always felt like home, and I've lived in rotten places.
Mm-hmm.
I've lived in bad parts of Chicago and bad parts of LA, and just, you know, but this Harvard Heights and West Adams, it's got such a good group of people living here that it doesn't feel unsafe to me. So I always kind of chuckle when I do have friends over that mm-hmm. find this area unsafe. They're kind of jumpy about noises and stuff, and it's like, hey, settle down. There's nothing going to jump out of anywhere and grab you. It's you're perfectly fine here. But I agree. I mean, this and other people, when we were looking to buy a place in this area, would look at you kind of crazy. Like, mm-hmm. really? You're going to move to that part of town?
It's right.
And you get here and you invite them over and they're like, oh, this is nice. I would never live here, but I'm glad that you do. And that's fine. It certainly takes a certain type to live here. And I'm just glad that the type that does live here are the people that I've met and have as neighbors.
Right. You know? I think they're great. I mean, I've met some really wonderful people. I mean, from the people that have lived here for decades to people that are new, it's just
right.
a great melange of creative, smart people, you know. I'm just really, you know, thrilled to be here. I have no desire to. I could just, like, live here the rest of my life. That's how I feel now.
That's exactly
how
I feel.
Working on my house and hang out and watch the property values just go through the roof.
That's the other great part. Because
that's what I think. I mean, I think that, you know, like 20, 30 years from now, this is going to be, you know, part of, like, just like Denver had its Larimer Square, right. This will be part of that whole downtown historical HBOZ
yeah.
renaissance, and it's just going to be a treasure. You know, people are going to wish that they would have gotten houses like we did.
Yes.
Way back then.
I completely agree, and I just see it happening more and more mm-hmm. all over. So it's to the renovation is...
Ooh, Harvard Heights.
Go Harvard Heights. Well, we're certainly happy to have you in the neighborhood, and thank you for joining me on... This is now episode 8 of this show, so
great.
I'm feeling more and more confident in each passing episode. But I thank you for finally joining me on the program, and look forward to having you as a continuing listener of the program.
So I am. I'm a big fan. I think it's great that you're doing these podcasts.
Thank you.
I've enjoyed getting them and listening to them every week. And I hope you just keep doing them. Don't keep going.
That's the goal. So we'll keep chugging away. So. Thank you for being here, and for Kim Calvert and David Nico, we'll see you in the neighborhood.
How we will celebrate our victory, we shall invite the whole team up for tea. How jolly, hurl that spheroid down the field and fight, fight, fight. Fight fiercely, Harvard, fight, fight, fight. Impress them with our prowess, do. Oh, fellows, do not let the crimson down. Be of stout heart and true. Come on, chaps, fight for Harvard's glorious name. Won't it be peachy if we win the game? Oh, goody, let's try not to injure them. But fight, 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 let's not be rough, though. Fight, 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 and do fight fiercely. Fight, fight, fight.